Welcome to History Class After Hours. I'm Joseph Barron. Joining me is Brian.
Hello.
Season 4.
Woo!
We're off to a new season, new school year, new topics, new information. Well, not technically new information because it's all history, but new information to some people.
Yeah. Yeah.
On that note, so today we are going piggybacking on the success of the Oppenheimer movie, which basically talks about the birth of the U.S. nuclear program. We're going to talk about the U.S. nuclear program today and its history.
Also, listen to our Oppenheimer episode. We did it before Christopher Nolan.
I think you even said that in the podcast.
That was the only reason I wanted to do it.
Except we're beating Christopher Nolan.
To beat Christopher Nolan. I can say that I beat Christopher Nolan. I am better than Christopher. No, I can't say that.
I was going to say his bank accounts.
Yeah.
I still need to go see it, by the way.
I haven't.
What?
I've been very busy because it came out right as marching band season started. So.
I thought you'd be like in line to see the 12:01 a.m. showing.
I thought I would be too.
Dressed up as Oppenheimer.
I did go see the Barbie movie though, because I was forced to. So, yeah. It wasn't that bad.
I've heard it's not that bad. My wife saw it last weekend.
Yeah, I had very low expectations.
That's what she said. And she said she didn't want to leave.
It was good.
Or
it was
didn't
good.
Want to, like, wasn't waiting for the movie to end. I think that's how she just.
The acting was amazing. I really liked the acting. Like, amazing acting.
Oscar?
Probably not.
Okay.
But still. Best original song, maybe, for I'm Just Ken, but you gotta listen
better
to
than,
it.
Better than Peaches from Mario movie?
If those two aren't in the nominations, I'm gonna be sad.
I heard the repeat all summer from my children playing it.
Oh, man.
Peaches!
I'm so sorry.
Yeah, oh well. It happens. But we're back. We're back at school.
Yep.
So now it's time to learn things.
Woo.
All right, so if you go back to our Oppenheimer episode, really dove deep into the Manhattan Project and the origins of the U.S. nuclear program. Top secret, happened in Los Alamos, New Mexico, occurred from 1942 to 1945. Basically, there was a race going on to see who could develop the first atomic weapon between the U.S., the Nazis. Some people say Japan was trying to do it, but and then the Russians. All right. Led by Oppenheimer, basically, he was successful. And he will first successfully test the atomic bomb on July 16th, 1945. I believe it's called Trinity.
Yes.
And there's a marker there right now. A little plaque. So here was Trinity. And then from that point, we're like, all right, it works. Let's try to make these things bigger and figure out new ways to use them. That's what we're going to be talking about today. All right. By the end of World War II, the United States had dropped two atomic bombs on the Japanese cities of Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and that would eventually lead to the ending of World War II. But after World War II, that's when you really start seeing the expansion of the U.S. nuclear program. So after the war, the United States sought to maintain its nuclear advantage and establish civilian uses for nuclear energy. So now they're looking beyond just the military. They're like, there's a lot of power here. Maybe we can use this for good. So in 1946, President Truman will sign the Atomic Energy Act, which created the United States Atomic Energy Commission, also known as the AEC. They got to wear nice helmets. They wore like white helmets.
Did they have like the atom with the orbital diagram?
I actually think so. I think it was like a yellow patch.
Yeah, I know what you're talking. Yeah.
So you also had the Atomic Energy Act, the Atomic Energy Act. It's also known as AEA, was a crucial piece of legislation in the United States that governs the development, regulation, and use of nuclear materials and technology. Since then, it's gone through several amendments. Main objectives, though, of the Atomic Energy Act are to promote peaceful uses of nuclear energy, ensure public health and safety, and prevent the proliferation of nuclear weapons. Which is kind of odd, because by the late 40s, we are proliferating nuclear weapons.
Yep.
But anyway, neither here. Every time I read this stuff, like 1950s nuclear stuff, I just think of Fallout.
Like the game?
Yeah.
I still
Fallout,
I haven't
Fallout
played
4.
Any. Oh. I haven't played any. I've heard Fallout 4 is amazing.
It's fantastic.
I heard 76 wasn't that good.
It was unplayable. But anyway. Right. Key provisions and features of the AEA include creation of the United States Atomic Energy Commission, as we already said. The AEA established the United States Atomic Energy Commission as the central agency responsible for overseeing all nuclear activities, both military and civilian, up until 1974, when it was finally abolished. And then they divided it into two other agencies, Nuclear Regulatory Commission and the Energy Research and Development Administration, which later merged into the Department of Energy. It's kind of weird that we didn't have a Department of Energy up until the 1970s, 80s.
Man, yeah, that is weird.
Okay. You saw the regulation of nuclear activities. They provide the legal framework for regulating the production, possession, and use of nuclear materials and facilities. Set up licensing system requiring companies, institutions, and individuals engaged in nuclear-related activities to obtain permits from the regulatory authorities. So whenever like a power company wanted to open up a nuclear facility or a nuclear power plant, they had to go through all sorts of
paperwork
and inspections. Obviously, you don't want a nuclear reactor in like your backyard and me building it.
Yeah.
Even though people have tried like that.
Wasn't there, like, this one kid who, for his Eagle Scout project, tried to build a nuclear reactor, and his whole neighborhood had, like, Geiger levels of, like, 140 or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
I know who you're talking about. And then he ended up dying of, I think, radiation poisoning?
Yeah.
Yeah. Don't want to mess with.
Don't build a nuclear reactor in your backyard, or garage, or wherever it was.
Basement. Also, the control of nuclear exports. The AEA empowers the U.S. government to control the export of nuclear materials, equipment, and technology to other countries. This helps prevent the spread of nuclear weapons and technology to potentially hostile or unstable regions. As during the Cold War, we were sending nuclear weapons all over the place. Germany, Italy, Turkey. And they were like, please don't send them to places we don't want.
I feel like that should be kind of just, you know,
you would think
mm-hmm. that people would know that.
So they also work on nuclear non-proliferation, always a fun word to say. It aligns with the U.S. commitment to non-proliferation of nuclear weapons. It supports international efforts such as the NPT, which stands for the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. Which basically was an agreement amongst the countries that had nuclear weapons where they said, no one else gets them. And then North Korea was like, watch us. And we've been watching them in Iran.
Go listen to our episodes on the Kim Dynasty.
Kim Dynasty?
Yeah, I think it was Kim Jong-un who like really started expanding the nuclear program.
Currently, the countries with nuclear weapons are the U.S., England, France, Russia, China, Pakistan, India, and there's a big question mark over Israel. Most people believe they have them, but they haven't admitted to it. And Iran and North Korea are trying to develop them.
I think
North Korea has developed them. It's just, I think, they keep on blowing up their own people website.
Well, it might not be a mistake. We don't even know.
All right. Also responsible for the development of nuclear energy for peaceful purposes. That, once again, falls into that research and development of nuclear energy for peaceful purposes, such as electricity generation, medical applications, and industrial uses. It recognizes the potential benefits of nuclear technology while emphasizing safety and security. Are they working on the... I always forget this. Nuclear reactors use fission?
Yeah, they use fission. They're trying
to...
fusion. Yes, but so far, it just hasn't produced enough energy to make it worthwhile of the energy consumption.
Didn't they have like a big breakthrough though this like last year?
I think so. Yeah,
like we're close.
Yeah, like if they can get a stable fusion reaction that like won't cost as much energy as it produces,
mm-hmm.
then like you could power pretty much almost all of the United States with one reactor. Like, it generates a ton of power.
And it's super safe and clean, right?
Yeah, because it's the same stuff that happens in the sun. Like, well, I don't know about the safe part, but it's very clean. It's very clean.
So, like, if there's a meltdown, you don't have to worry about, like, Chernobyl happening?
I don't think so.
Oh.
Yeah. It's the same stuff that the sun undergoes to produce energy. So
we're just creating mini suns.
I'm not a nuclear scientist, so
I just play one on TV.
What? Yeah.
All right. Also, they were responsible for secrecy and classification, which was protection of classified information related to nuclear activities. Well, that didn't go well.
Nope.
Russians got those plans pretty quick, and I feel like there's been other times where nuclear secrets have been sold. There was a guy in the 70s and 80s, I forgot what his name was, called like the Falcon. He was like stealing nuclear secrets and going to Mexico and delivering them to the Russian embassy in Mexico. I think there's a movie with Sean Penn in it about that. The Falcon and something. Maybe we'll do a podcast on him.
Ooh, maybe.
He's fascinating. And then he went and like lived in Oregon.
Season 4 is the nuclear season.
Nuclear season. Yeah. We're going nuclear. So the Atomic Energy Act has been a critical framework that has helped the U.S. balance the promotion of peaceful nuclear technology with the need to prevent proliferation of nuclear weapons. As nuclear technology continues to play a significant role in energy and scientific fields, the AEA remains a vital part of the nation's nuclear policy and regulatory landscape. All right. So that's basically the gist of how our government has responded to the nuclear age, all right? But as we will see, the proliferation element of this is not going to hold true. Because during the Cold War, we will have our nuclear arms race with the Soviet Union. Basically, it's a race to see who could build the most nukes and who could build the best payload systems to deliver those nukes, all right? During the Cold War, both sides prescribed to this idea called MAD, which stands for Mutual Assured Destruction. The idea is, if you launch your nukes against us, we will launch our nukes against you, and everybody will die.
Have you seen the movie War Games?
I have.
Yeah.
Where he plays tic-tac-toe, yep. And it ends up being a nuclear standoff.
Yeah. It's a really good movie if you haven't seen it. For anyone listening,
the special effects are a little outdated.
Well, it's 1989, I think.
Oh, it's way before that.
It is?
Yeah,
oh,
it's like 81, 82.
It's very.
It's early.
It's old, but it's still a really good movie. Yeah.
Also, both sides would follow a policy called brinkmanship, which was basically trying to move that line as close as possible to nuclear holocaust without actually causing one. They were playing a very dangerous game. All right. During this time, all sorts of weird nuclear weapons and devices are going to be produced. Also, we are going to continue to test nuclear weapons, and the United States decides, you know what, Pacific Islands are the place we want to do this. And this is where you'll have Bikini Island. I'll call it a disaster. When you wipe out an entire island unexpectedly, consider that a disaster.
Yeah.
So this was kind of the last time the United States detonated nuclear devices in the atmosphere. It happened in 1954. It was part of what was called Castle Bravo. Castle Bravo was, they thought they were going to have an atomic blast around 7 or 8 megatons, and it ended up being 15. And the blast wave was far bigger than they expected. The damage was far bigger than they expected. The radioactive fallout was greater than they expected. They had to evacuate all sorts of islands. There was some poor Japanese fishermen that just somehow got through the containment zone, and they suffered third-degree burns. It was just an all-around disaster.
There was this one island, I think it was after Castle Bravo, where they had, there was like this radioactive ash falling, and everyone thought it was snow, and there were people like eating it and playing around in it, and just later on, it resulted in a ton of like birth defects and illnesses, and it was terrible.
That's not good.
Yeah.
And if you go on Google Earth and look up Bikini Island, you can still see the massive part of the island that they blew, like completely blew away. It's called the Bikini Island Crater or the Castle Bravo Crater. All right. And it was 1,000 times more powerful than the bombs dropped on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And at this point, the world's like, this is getting crazy. We might not need to put some limitations on that. And that's kind of when the AEA and all that stuff kind of gets their ball rolling and things like that. But they're still developing things to deliver nuclear weapons. So they're not necessarily testing these things anymore. We actually have a testing facility in Nevada. I think it's Nevada. And they do it all underground now. You can see that on Google Earth. It just looks like this cratered landscape. Because when they detonate one underground, it just sucks the ground down. But like I said, we're going to be developing all sorts of new weird weapons to try to deliver these things. At the same time, the Russians are going to detonate the largest bomb in history. It's a little bit later, 1960. This one's 50 megatons. It's called the Tsarist bomb. There's actually a video of that too.
Yeah.
Very, very, very.
I think I've seen
stuff.
It. It's very big.
Very big. Too big to be carried by any system. So that was. Our government was like, oh, you can have your big bombs, but you can't deliver it to us, so just stop doing things. Also around this time period, the United States is playing a more, talk about brinkmanship. We're also using this idea called Operation Chrome Dome, where we have bombers going to Russia every day, and then they get a radio message at like the last moment to turn back to the United States, and they're all nuclear payloads and things like that. Go back and listen to our episode Broken Arrows to see why that stopped.
Ooh, that's an old one.
Mm-hmm. Because all the planes were crashing with nuclear devices and we almost destroyed North Carolina. But anyway, so.
That, like, if you forget just to radio in one day, then, like, you would be responsible for the end of the world. Like,
there was, like, several movies in the 60s made about that. Dr. Strangelove kind of plays into that. Good night, good luck. No, it's not that. There's several. Failsafe. I think Failsafe is the big one about that. But some of the things we're developing are just now comical. First, you had Atomic Annie. It was known as the Atomic Cannon. It was a cannon that would fire a 20 kiloton nuclear warhead about 20 miles and was meant to be used against infantry. But was replaced by missiles quite quickly. There's video of them testing that. Just like, what are these people thinking? It's literally a cannon that fires an atomic bomb. And then they had a smaller version, which was called Davy Crockett, which fired from a recoilless rifle and only had a range of about 2 miles. So you're kind of putting your people in harm's way.
Yeah.
Davy Crockett can famously be seen if you've ever watched the original, not the remake, the original King Kong versus Godzilla. They fired Davy Crockett at King Kong. But it doesn't have, they don't have nuclear warheads. They have berries that make them sleepy. Civilian uses. Operation Plowshare. This is where they said, you know what? Nuclear bombs, they go boom really big. A lot bigger boom than TNT. So let's use those to mine. That didn't work out either.
Yeah.
You had the Nike missile system, which basically the U.S. Air Force is like, best air defense is nuclear weapons. So these were ground-to-air missiles that were armed with nuclear warheads, and you were supposed to detonate them in the atmosphere to shoot down planes.
Huh.
If you ever go to the Everglades, you can go see a Nike missiles site.
Ooh.
And they're like in like tractor sheds. So they're housing.
Is like, do they still like use Nike missiles or?
Nike missiles, I think, were phased out in the early 60s.
All right.
Nike missiles were kind of the forefront of the Cuban Missile Crisis, where we're like, hey, Soviets, you can't put missiles in Cuba. But then the Soviets were like, but you have those Nike missiles in Turkey. So we're like, fine, we'll get rid of them. But we were already getting rid of them. So
yeah.
We had nuclear torpedoes. It was a nuclear armed torpedo that was 15 feet long, designed to kill enemy subs. Seems a little overkill.
Yeah.
And then we had atomic landmines.
That just, like, at that point, wouldn't it just detonate all the other landmines, like, surrounding it?
You would think so, yeah. They were remotely detonated. But in order to detonate them remotely, you had to have someone with the remote close enough to detonate them. They didn't really think that one through either.
Yeah.
All right, so basically this continues from the 60s, 70s, and 80s of trying to design these new systems and things like that. 70s, you're going to start seeing SALT, Strategic Armed Limitation Treaties. That's when the Soviets and the United States are starting to play nice. We're like, you know what? Let's stop doing this. It's getting crazy. Let's start reducing our nuclear payloads and our nuclear arsenals. In the 80s, it's going to pick back up a little bit again because Reagan's going to introduce the comical Star Wars, which if you want to see something funny, go watch his the ad for it on YouTube. The idea was we were going to have space lasers shoot down ICBMs in Russia. We didn't have the technology. We had no way of creating it, but the Soviets thought we did. So then they started to panic and started spending money that they didn't have, and that would help lead to their economic downfall. But at the fall of the Soviet Union, once again, arsenals are going to be downsized significantly. Put in perspective, I think at the height of the Cold War, the Soviets had over 100,000 nuclear warheads. We had somewhere around 60,000. That's more than enough to just destroy the Earth. I think right now we're down to like 1,500, and they're down to 3,000. And all the material is stored underneath the mountain in Nevada. All right. So where are we at currently? Early 2000s, we were still trying to design some type of system to shoot down ICBMs. I don't think we've really, it's more of the non-proliferation what we're trying to do now, where just trying to prevent people from getting nuclear weapons. That's it. That's our long, weird history with nuclear stuff.
Yeah, we did some pretty weird things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Personally, like the nuclear mining equipment.
I'm assuming it didn't work.
It did not. No, yeah. That's why they don't use that anymore. A little too dangerous.
Yeah.
Problem was you would make a mine shaft and then you couldn't go in the mine shaft.
Maybe you like pretty get good robots or something. I don't know.
Anyway, well, thank you for listening.
Thank you for tuning in to History Class After Hours, the show where we talk about the things your history teachers didn't have time to teach you. If you wanted to stay updated on upcoming events for the History Club, please visit www.starsmillhistoryc.wixsite.com/2020. If you liked this episode, please share it with your friends and subscribe to our channel on iTunes Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you're listening. Be on the lookout for new episodes, and we'll be posting every week. Until next time, stay curious.